papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.
So here we are with the Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis on what's going on in the news media and some insight into decision making in local newsrooms. I'm Rex Smith, former editor of the Times Union, here with you with some of my colleagues. Here is Judy Patrick, the former editor of the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. You doing okay?
Happy to be here.
Oh, well, we're of course happy to see you. And Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy. And you're okay?
I'm very good. A little jet lag from a wonderful vacation, but I'm happy to be here.
Good for you. Speaking of vacations, Ira Fussfeld is here, probably before one soon to come, right?
Well, I don't know, but I haven't been okay in about 42 years. So. But I'll get through.
I was the former publisher of the Daily Freeman and affiliated publications in Kingston, New York, and was an editor and even a sports writer before that. So among the four of us here, we probably have 180 years of experience. I'm just making that up, but it's probably not. Oh,
well,
dear.
Journalists doing math. Yeah. Warning.
Well, 40 each in round numbers, it did you 160 in a hurry.
See? There we go. I'm not so bad at math. Most journalists are. But speaking of numbers, there's the annual Pew Foundation study into the state of journalism in America. And there's some really amazing findings on this, some of which is very disconcerting. Notably, the share of U.S. adults who say they are paying close attention to local news has dropped significantly. And while Americans still say they see value in local news, the share of Americans who follow local news very closely has fallen by 15 points since 2016. So now only about one in five say that they follow local news very closely. Now, maybe that's not surprising, but it is distressing, isn't it?
It is, but it's not surprising at all. And it's because local news itself is changing and people's habits are changing. And typically, I mean, the primary way people got their local news or people think they get their local news is by watching an evening newscast. And I think those numbers are down. Newspaper readership is down. Although I would say the readership itself isn't down. I think they're accessing it in other ways. And what people perceive as news is different. I mean, when you ask a question, where do you get your local news? Maybe one person's local news is another person's nothing interesting to see here. It would be helpful if some of these surveys took a deeper dive into what exactly they're watching and what they think of local news. Are they paying attention to the school board elections? I think people still are doing that.
Well, as a publisher, there are any number of numbers in that survey that jumped out at me, but two in particular were the fact that most people have not paid for news in recent times. And then correspondingly, most people didn't believe, at a wide number, most people didn't know the financial plight of newspapers and the media in general. And I guess that one you could add, if you're not paying for news, at some point somebody's got to think to themselves, well, who's paying for it? Because otherwise, how is it getting in front of me?
Only about 15%, to your point, are saying they're paying
right.
for the news
yes.
that they're getting.
I came away with the same takeaways as you, and that 15%, so there might be some communities where there are free weekly newspapers providing news so that they don't have to pay for local news if they're looking at their product. Those would still be advertising driven, perhaps. But the 15%, I could give you one anecdotal story, is that 6 months ago, my paid subscription to the Saratogian needed to be renewed. I was getting it 7-day delivery plus digital, and I decided to switch for $1. $1 I could get full digital access for 6 months. And then when the 6 months ran out, I didn't renew it. I canceled it to see what would happen. And I got a call yesterday from the Saratogian circulation people saying they'd like to make me an offer, 6 months of full digital subscription plus Sunday print delivery for 6 months for 50 cents.
Whoa.
So, 50 cents total?
50 cents. And they didn't ask for my credit card over the phone, which I'm glad I realized later. I don't even know who's really calling. They're going to send it to me.
Of course, the value
mail.
To them is not so, in that subscription revenue. It's in the access of the advertisers to your address.
You know? Right. So it's a totally different way of counting how they are making their money.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
it seemed crazy to be able to get that.
But,
right.
But the money is not flying through the windows either, just from digital. In other words, I don't know how they're measuring success, but I believe it is acknowledged that the digital revenue has not been anywhere near as much as they'd hoped it had been.
Which is why there are so few reporters and why, therefore, fewer people say, yes, I'm going to sign up and pay because there's much less value. And I'm not sure you're right, Judy, by the way, when you say that people are still getting news from the newspapers. I think a lot of people are simply going away from the news. People, you know, don't know where the news may come from, but it is true that more people now are getting news from digital, if they are going to newspapers at all. 31% of the people who get news from a newspaper do so via print, while two-thirds of it do digitally. Now, isn't that interesting? Even as recently as 2018, you still had a majority getting newspaper news from print, and that has really changed.
And when you think about it, I mean, people access radio news, television news for free. They don't pay for that. And so a whole generation of people have come to think that, oh, digital is just like radio and TV. I can access this for free. They don't know where the money comes from.
But it's not for free. And by and large, people are getting their local news on cable, which you're paying a cable bill for, which is one of the reasons why cable is another industry that's not doing as well as it once did. It's not just newspapers.
But I don't think it's because people are paying for cable to get their news. I don't think they're accessing news. And if they are, they're just looking at their social media sites to see whatever summaries are being provided or what's being aggregated for them to peek through. And it's that echo chamber of stuff you already agree with.
Mm-hmm. By the way, your experience of getting a call to keep your subscription going is interesting. As long ago as I was the editor of The Record in the early 90s, that's how old I am. And isn't that amazing? And I remember when you would try to cancel your subscription, they wouldn't let you. That is, you would have to call three times before the circulation department would respond to a cancellation. And this, I think, is a trick. I don't know, Ira, if you ever did
well,
that.
I'm not aware of that specifically, although if I was a publisher in the early 90s, I would not have let that happen in my company. So I think that may have less been a strategy and more bad management and bad employees.
Yeah, it was kind of annoying. Although my favorite day happened when I didn't get a paper delivered, and I was the editor of the paper. I lived out in the country, and I called to say, you know, my paper didn't get there. And the woman who eventually answered the phone, I mean, it took like 20 rings before she got the phone, and she said, oh yeah, that's Charlie. His brakes went out, so he's going real slow on his route today.
but that in fact is, of course, accurate, because the newspapers typically were sent out by carriers who were independent contractors and who were supposedly, if they couldn't deliver the route for whatever reason on a particular day, they were responsible for bringing in a substitute. That's where the plan fell apart, because they weren't always able to get a substitute.
Well, I still subscribe to the Times Union online and in print daily. And for approximately the last 20 years, we've been well serviced by this carrier named Dan Cole, who just recently retired. So you felt like you knew him and what they go through all kinds of weather.
Yeah, isn't that something?
It's in the middle of the night, or certainly it's before dawn, that they're still delivering the paper. But he would get it on our porch, and our new guy has been delivering the paper, but he gets it onto the sidewalk. My husband feels like Tony Soprano at the beginning when he has to trudge out. it's a shorter driveway to get to the paper.
I think you guys have talked about this, but more and more newspapers apparently are going to the Postal Service to have delivery now.
It's far more efficient for them, it seems like.
As long as timing doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't matter.
Is it same day delivery?
I
don't believe it.
Yeah, some of it's not same day. It's true, it changes the delivery. But do you think that what people care about in terms of local news has changed in the last generation?
What they care about?
Do you think that people nowadays care less about their school boards?
Yes,
care
I do.
Less about how their kids did on the team? Or is it they're accessing the information directly from the school website?
No, I think it's not that. I would say that people don't care about what their municipalities are doing, like the planning board, the city council, that kind of thing. Don't you think that has fallen off in terms of civic engagement?
I definitely do. Mm-hmm. And I think that people have found other ways to get some of the community news that they want, that maybe their youth sports organizations are posting things, perhaps fill the need that we thought was so important to local newspapers. But who's covering the school boards if people aren't following it? And it's worrisome. The League of Women Voters tries to do that prior to elections. But people have to know to seek that out, to find their website. And they go to all the small towns and ask questions of the school board candidates. It's helpful if you are interested and know to look for it.
It's good, but information actually usually gets to people because it's pushed to them, because there are great techniques in social media and to get the information to find the people as opposed to people finding it. And League of Women Voters and other organizations like that don't typically have that kind of sophisticated push strategy.
True.
So the information basically may be there, but people don't find out about it. And it's really kind of tragic. And so this is why the nonprofit ecosystem that is growing to support local news enterprises around the country is so important, because that can provide the kind of expertise in delivering the news digitally that can make a difference now to get it out to people.
Well, in the meantime, while print is dying and digital is struggling, it's doing better and is struggling, the necessity to go to traditional news sources beyond the technical reasons is that people simply don't believe us anymore. And we could say tomorrow is Monday if today is Sunday, and people will question it.
You know, one of the reasons cited in ProPublica won a Pulitzer Prize for its reporting on the Supreme Court and the troublesome connections some of the members of some of the justices had with people before the court. One of the beneficial things cited about that win was the fact that they worked so hard to get that information to people on multiple platforms and how successful that was, that it wasn't just something that they published on their platform, but they pushed it out through Instagram, through Twitter, through Facebook, and that has been applauded as, this is what we need to do. We need to work harder and using all the different avenues available to us.
That is admirable, and I think that's one of the things that these digital sites around the country are increasingly doing. For example, we've talked here about States Newsroom, which has outlets in all 50 states, and these digital platforms are typically striking partnerships with chains of newspapers even. For example, the Gannett chain relies heavily upon States Newsrooms around the country. And so they are actually getting this stuff out through legacy channels and then letting anybody use it once it's actually had its initial publication. So there's a lot of that that's really good. For example, I mean, I've talked here about Adirondack Explorer, which is a terrific newsroom up in the Adirondacks that has a partnership deal with the Times Union, but also pushes its stuff out through other channels as well.
Do you think that beyond the obvious advantages of digital, the technology and video and all the bells and whistles, and acknowledging the fact that print is not read nearly as much as it used to be, is it simply that I'm an old timer? I don't find that I can get as much out of the online, the digital editions, even though it's timelier, we're breaking news, and the stories are essentially the same stories, are often the same stories that appear in the print paper. I need to read it in print. I'm distracted on digital. I don't feel like scrolling. I might not spot all the stories. Am I the only one who's an old fogey on this, or...
You know, there's new research that shows that actually your chances of having more of your story read increases when it's online, because oftentimes people will open up a page and if they see a half page of dense print, they'll say, oh, I can't bother to read that. That's too much for me. But when they're reading it online, especially on their mobile phone, they have no idea how deep that story goes, and they're more likely to stay with the story for more inches than they typically would in print.
Yeah.
The other advantage for digital is that it can be so much more compelling because there can be actually photographs and charts and so on. And perhaps it is an age thing, Ira. Maybe it is that younger readers especially appreciate the different presentation of the stories. And as we increasingly learn how to present news in compelling ways, I think it's going to help.
There's a website, the Newseum, which we are all familiar with, although it's no longer in business as a museum. But the Newseum has a service where they'll send out the front pages of most newspapers literally around the world, and you can highlight which ones you want to see on a day in and day out basis. So I have 30 or 40 newspapers I look at from their front page every day of the week, and I always find myself with not always the same one every day, but oh, that looks like an interesting story. The way it's presented on the front page, it draws me to the story and makes me want to read more than just what's on the front page. I want to go to the jump. I don't feel that way when I'm reading something digitally.
I understand where you're coming from as far as the display of the front page, which page designers would spend a lot of time trying to make appealing front pages that people would click on, or not click on, but actually look down on with their eyeballs. But I think that I've grown to appreciate what you can see on my phone, not even on my iPad, but on my phone. And you can see it's still the front page. It's just a different version of, it's not copy of the front page. It's not an e-edition of the page. But what's the top stories? There is a plan for the presentation of that news, what's considered most important. And you see those same elements transferred over to digital, bigger type, subheads, clicking on related stories. You can click on past stories. You can just see a lot more. People are scanners by nature, so they could be scanning the headlines. They can switch topics. Downside is that you don't explore the way print newspaper readers would have.
The serendipity of finding something you happen to come across.
I'll mention them because they're in our market, but I look at the front page of the Berkshire Eagle every day, and almost every day I have a layout that makes me want to read the story. Now, I don't read the print edition or the digital edition beyond seeing that front page, so I don't know what their faults might be. They may just be you can't tell a book by its cover syndrome.
And I think that people are also not necessarily going to digital versions of newspapers to see their news, but they are just maybe Googling a topic and seeing what comes up. So the design of the front page may not even matter that much.
Hmm. I remember when I was the editor of The Record, I would sometimes laugh about saying that it was the Potemkin Village paper because there wasn't much beyond the front page. Sorry, our own black humor. But it was so much more than these local papers have become now. You know, an interesting fact about the Pulitzer Prizes. You mentioned the Pulitzer that went to ProPublica. One of the observations made by Roy Peter Clark, a veteran newspaper analyst from the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida, is how few of the regional papers now are winning Pulitzers. Papers like Baltimore and St. Petersburg and a paper like Dayton, Ohio, for example, that won Pulitzers. The Berkshire Eagle did in the 1950s, of course. And now that is so rare. This year there were 4 Pulitzers in smaller papers, let's say. Smaller being bigger than any of the papers around here. Pittsburgh, Chattanooga, Miami, and Nashville. But those are still not national papers like the New York Times. But the regional papers just don't have enough staff anymore to do the kind of deep reporting that tends to win Pulitzers. Though the digital pure plays, things like the Marshall Project, which looks at justice, and ProPublica, those now are able to do some of the deep reporting that tends to win the big prizes.
It's funny, though, you mentioned a handful of papers as regional papers. I've always thought of a city like Baltimore as being a metro paper. Has the definition changed?
Regional, well, depends on what you consider.
To my mind, you have metro, you have regional, you have community.
Ah.
The Albany paper, I would say, is a regional paper based on its size, not having nothing to do with its content.
Hmm.
Now, were you a judge this year on a Pulitzer?
No, I haven't been a juror in a long time, but I did it twice, and it was interesting. I did an analysis at that time, actually, to see what percentage of the papers were below, I think my number was 200,000 circulation, which would have been the top 50 U.S. newspapers. And at that time, only 13% of the Pulitzers over the previous 10 years had been won by anything outside the top 50 markets.
This is my cue that every year for at least the last 30, I think, when we talk about the prizes, I say, why isn't there a category for sports journalism? Sports journalism has historically been known to be the most creative and best written in many newspapers, and yet the handful or so of people who have won Pulitzers who are sports people won it not because it was a sports award, but because it fit into a broader category. For example, the commentary. There have only been 4 sports awards for commentary: Arthur Daly, Red Smith, Dave Anderson, and Jim Murray.
Uh-huh.
And it's been like that for decades. I don't understand why there isn't a separate category for sports journalism.
If you did that, though, wouldn't you have to do other issue categories?
Could
wouldn't
be.
You have to do one for health journalism?
Could
wouldn't
be.
You do it? And so I think.
But why not?
You know, there was a fun Twitter thread that suggested what we really need is a Pulitzer for the best story written using the Wi-Fi on McDonald's parking lot. A Pulitzer for the best coverage of a spring festival, you know. And the point of that thread was that the bread and butter of a lot of newspapers is covering these small community events and working hard and doing the not glorious work that money and resources allows the big papers to do. It's not that the reporting at the local level isn't good. It's just that they don't have the resources. They don't have the time. They can't hire experts to analyze. I remember there was a series of stories about where fish came from that you were consuming that came out of the Boston area. I mean,
fabulous.
A small paper doesn't have those resources. Yeah. And as the divide between the big papers like the New York Times and the Washington Post and everybody else grows wider and wider, you're going to see more of the concentration of the Pulitzers in those big papers. You might see ProPublica also has enough resources and time. I mean, let's talk about the time that's required for an investigative piece. It's huge. When you're investigating something like the Supreme Court, you do not have time to do, you know, the bread and butter kind of stories that can be boring to most people. Maybe that's why they don't
get read. Time and staff. The Supreme Court Award, which, by the way, also won just before the Pulitzers, won the Nellie Bly Award from the Museum of Political Corruption in Albany. I was a judge for that one. And that team is seven reporters. So when you have, now can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
Isn't that a wonderful
thing? A dream
team.
Well, I would have loved to have won a Pulitzer. We didn't do anything Pulitzer worthy, but I was proud while I was at the Saratogian that we would win for our size paper a really good number of national and state awards for the work we were doing. And
yeah,
I mean, you're not doing as much investigative work as you wish you were, but what we did do was worthy of no applause from our peers. Although one of my many publishers, I remember saying they were very happy with the awards that we were winning, but would also say to me, it's more important for us to be consistently good than occasionally great. And we weren't trying to win awards. We were trying to do great journalism at our paper. But it was Judy saying the day in and day out coverage is really...
Well, and I think you led a good newsroom. I think obviously I tried to hire everybody I could from your newsroom.
Yes, and you did very well.
Thank you. But I mean, it did make a difference in your community, I think. And this is true. We all worked hard to try to serve, to think, what does the community need? What really makes a difference here? And you try to speak to the needs of your community, which didn't always mean that you were speaking to what judges might like. When I worked for Newsday, which is a great big paper with a lot of money, I spent a year tracking what was going on in state government with the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant, then under construction, quite controversial, which eventually Governor Mario Cuomo came to demand the shutdown of, and that did in fact happen. But it was the fundamental issue for Long Island. It was the biggest issue that they were looking at in state government, but it wasn't what the people who give awards for state government coverage would pay attention to.
In the real old days, newspapers that would publish special sections that they were especially proud of, for some reason, would mail them to other newspapers. We all probably received those in the past. Just wanted you to see this special section on, you know, water quality, whatever the heck it is. And I was working as an intern at the Binghamton Sun Bulletin at the time. And I remember the editor, Dick Thien, said, we're going to send this to every newspaper and just say, just want to let you know that we published again today.
That was actually part of their campaign for a Pulitzer, because they were actually hoping that some of those people who got that would be Pulitzer jurors.
It's like in the movies with four-year consideration.
Yeah, four-year consideration. By the way, if you have thoughts on anything we've been talking about, media at WAMC.org. We are the Media Project, and we'd love to hear it. I'm Rex Smith, here with Barbara Lombardo and Judy Patrick and Ira Fussfeld. Ira mentioned sports coverage, and we ought to talk about what happened in Indianapolis. It's just an interesting episode.
Go ahead.
Great. The longtime top sports columnist for the Indianapolis Star, Greg Doyle, will now not be allowed to cover the Indiana Fever, which drafted Caitlin Clark last month, because of an awkward moment at the press conference where she was introduced. He made a little hand gesture.
She makes a hand gesture like a heart. It turns out that it's a private message between her and her family. This is Caitlin Clark, of the women's basketball star. Mm-hmm. And she has now become a rookie in the professional league. And at the introductory press conference, this longtime columnist introduced himself to her by using that same heart signal, and was deemed by most people apparently as inappropriate and unprofessional, and he has now been suspended for 2 weeks and will not be allowed to cover their games, which is a major thing in that city because he's one of their top, if not the top, columnist in sports. And I guess the question for us is, would we have reacted the same in terms of punishing him for that gesture?
Well, what do you think, Ira?
I think as a columnist, you have a little bit more leeway to do that sort of thing. But I've already established that on a fuddy-duddy. I would rather it be just straight ask the question and get out.
I think this was shooting a fly with a cannon. His apology column, his public apologies should have sufficed. He made an error of judgment, and he has an inspiring, noteworthy career as a sports writer, and I thought that this was too much.
When he made the gesture in the press conference, she said to him, "You like that?" And he said, "I like that you're here." She said, "I do that to my family after every game," to which he responded, "Start doing it to me and we'll get along just fine."
Okay, that was terrible.
Yeah, that's why I agree this is fine. You know, take him off the beat. I can appreciate the fact that they took two or three weeks to decide. You know, they took their time. It wasn't a rash decision. You know, there are plenty of other things for him to cover. There may have been other things involved, other factors involved to having him take off the beat. He didn't lose his job. He's just going to have to cover something else.
Well, and he'll lose his 2 weeks of pay.
and the newspaper will lose his commentary on what is arguably one of the biggest sports stories in the country right now, which is this woman's debut in professional women's basketball.
Yeah, there's plenty of people to comment.
I don't know. It just goes back to how big a mistake, what's the cost of one mistake? It wasn't a great mistake. There's been a lot worse. I thought it was too much.
All right. Well, we're having to leave it at that point because we are out of time for this week's show. Amazingly sad, isn't it? That's all we have. This is the Media Project. So you've been listening to Ira Fussfeld, and that last comment was Barbara Lombardo's Judy Patrick before that, who would have suspended the reporter as well.
Well, you could suspend him, but don't take him off the beat.
All right, last words. I'm Rex Smith, with gratitude to our producer, David Gustina, and to you folks for joining us once again this week on the Media Project.
Meet such interesting people. It must have startled poor old Sadie's on. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper gill. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers...